Support for WPR comes from Schultz Nonprofit Law, sharing WPR's mission to inform and inspire, and providing advice for nonprofits, cooperatives, and other social enterprises. SchultzNonprofitLaw.com.
It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret has the day off. Coming up later, we'll talk about some of the best movies of 2013 and what might win big at this year's Academy Awards. First, it's a classic New Year's resolution. I'm finally going to stop smoking. And while it's a good goal to have, our next guest says there's a better way to go about it. My guest is Morgan Johnson, Director of Programs and Research at the Monday Campaigns. Morgan, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So it's New Year's Day, a day when lots of folks are thinking, my resolution is to quit smoking. Apparently, the numbers of people who think about this double on New Year's Day. What's wrong with wanting to make one heroic effort to quit smoking?
Well, there's certainly nothing wrong with picking New Year's as a quit date. We know a lot of people do it, and you know, we want to encourage people to continue to quit whenever they see fit. However, some of our recent research, which was published last year in JAMA Internal Medicine, shows that people are more likely to quit on a Monday or look for help on a Monday throughout the year to quit smoking. So what we have found at the Monday campaigns is Monday can be a good trigger to help remind you to stay quit over time. So it's not that you're making, as you put it, one big heroic effort to quit on New Year's, but you can start quitting on New Year's and then use Monday as a day to really follow up on that resolution throughout the year.
So in other words, you might fall off the wagon a little bit during the week, but then come Monday, you recommit to quit.
Yeah, absolutely. What we know is most people who attempt to quit smoking on New Year's are going to be puffing away by Groundhog's Day, really. So what you can do instead of just making that one effort, if you do find yourself slipping or relapsing or picking up those cigarettes again, just use the next Monday as a day to re-quit or recommit to your quit.
Well, why Monday? What is it about Monday that makes people want to quit?
Well, Monday is a day that people generally see as a fresh start, a day for a new beginning. We see this through a lot of our survey research. The psychology literature also demonstrates that Monday is a day that people feel more motivated to change their behavior. So it's not only a good day as far as your internal motivations, but it's also something we all share. So it's, you know, sort of a shared cultural experience. Everyone has a Monday every week. So if you're using Monday as really that day to recommit to your health, you can know that you're not alone. There are millions of other people out there that are thinking about Monday as that day to start or recommit to their health.
Do you think there's also something about admitting that probably you're going to fail during this quest to quit smoking and that you've got it built into your plan already? Yes, I'm probably not going to make it all the way, so I'll just start again on Monday, and that takes some of the pressure off.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things we often do with New Year's resolutions is we, you know, try to do something big and then we feel bad about it if it doesn't work out right away. Well, the fact about smoking is it does take a number of attempts to quit. So, you know, the research ranges, that's anywhere between, you know, 7 and 20 attempts to really quit for good. But if you're recommitting to that quit on a weekly basis, even if you fall off the wagon, you know, if you do it every week, then you would think that in a shorter period of time, you could quit for good rather than trying to quit once a year on New Year's.
So let's say someone out there is inspired to try this Monday approach. What are some steps and tips that they can try?
So a few tips that we like to throw around at Mondays. For one, you want to use Monday as a quit day. So I know New Year's Day this year isn't on a Monday, but if you are trying to quit today, make sure you're recommitting to that quit attempt coming up next week on Monday. Really use Monday as that day to plan for the week ahead. You know, anticipate any triggers that might make you pick up a cigarette. Reflect back on the week previous to see, okay, you know, I did have that craving. I didn't deal with it well. What's another way I can get around that craving in the future? You can use Monday to check in with a buddy, whether it's a fellow quitter or a family member or somebody else in your life that can support you in your quit. Use Monday as that day to check in with them and you know, see if you can make it through the next week together if they are a fellow quitter. But also, it's a good day to celebrate your success. So if you were able to stay quit for the week, you know, give yourself a pat on the back on Monday. Do something nice for yourself. Use that money that you would have used to pay for cigarettes on going to the movies or taking yourself out to eat. So Monday is really that day you can, you know, start again or recommit to that quit.
I like the language that you're inventing around the Monday quit. You said something like staying quit. And it's a good way to think about it because hardly anybody quits anything forever at one time, especially at least.
Right. You're basically, if you're quitting smoking, you should think of yourself as somebody that's a quitter for life. You're always quitting. So, you know, it's something that you're going to have to battle throughout the course of your life once you put down the cigarette. And that's okay. And that's something that we understand. So, but if you can be proud of that and say to yourself at least once a week on Monday, hey, I'm a quitter and I'm going to keep up with this, you know, that's a good positive attitude to have.
So let's say someone's doing pretty well. Maybe they've had a couple of Mondays where they have re-quit and they've stuck with it. What about rewards? Are those important?
Absolutely. I think it's very important, whether it's, you know, quitting smoking or starting a new diet, an exercise routine, it is important to reward yourself because we need that positive reinforcement to keep going. So as I mentioned, you know, you can do something like save the money that you would have paid for cigarettes and use that on yourself to, you know, do something nice like go out to eat, go to the movies. It's also, again, a day you want to celebrate with people. So if you do have those support systems in your life, which many of us do, that are aware that you're trying to quit smoking, you know, maybe they can give you a call, cheer you up, take you out, you know, do something to celebrate the fact that you're making this great attempt to change your health behavior.
What about a journaling approach, or at least taking stock of how the week went? Is that sort of built into the Monday plan?
Yeah, again, Monday is a great day to reflect back on the week previous. So if you had any cravings that were really difficult for you, you know, how did you manage those? Did they go well? Did they not go well? So you're continuously learning from that experience, but also to look to the week ahead. So let's say you like to go out to the bar with your friends, and that's a time when you often might smoke. You know, look at your schedule, say, okay, you know, I'm meeting my friend on Wednesday night. We're going to go to the bar. Well, you know, I'm aware that that might trigger me to pick up a cigarette. So maybe I want to meet my friend at a restaurant instead, or just do something else so I can avoid that trigger.
In terms of using the Monday plan, is there any sense that there could be a danger there that you just think, well, yeah, I can not try my hardest, or I can smoke during the week, and there's always Monday. There's always another Monday, so maybe I don't ever really have to quit.
Yeah, you know, there is a sort of this sense, I think in particular, again, with diet and exercise, that, if you know you're going to make a concerted effort in the near future, that maybe you're slacking off in the present. But what we like to think of Monday as is really this time that you're committing to your quit. So you're not just saying, okay, I'm just not going to smoke today on Monday. Like, you're really saying to yourself, okay, I want to quit cigarettes, and this is my day that I'm going to start that quit. And what we found through our research, too, is that people that are doing good things for their health behavior at the beginning of the week on Monday are more likely to carry through with that behavior throughout the week.
Can this approach, this Monday approach, can we use it for other stuff like losing weight, getting in shape, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Monday works for a wide variety of health behaviors. We at the Monday Campaigns work on physical activity. We work on nutrition. So if people are out there saying, you know, I want to go to the gym more this year, I want to have a healthier diet this year, Monday is a great day to do those things. It also works for sexual health behaviors. So if you're trying to encourage people to, you know, have safe sex or get tested for STDs, that's another thing we found, that it's conducive to Mondays. So there are a wide range of health behaviors that really apply to this Monday concept.
Morgan, thank you so much for joining us today, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We've been talking to Morgan Johnson, Director of Programs and Research at the Monday Campaigns. Meanwhile, as the frigid temperatures continue in Wisconsin this week, it's prime movie watching time. Luckily, now is a good time to see some of this year's top Oscar contenders in the theater, or you can catch up with the ones that are already out on DVD. And joining us for our monthly movie segment is Rob Thomas, editor of 77 Square, the arts and entertainment publication of the Capital Times. And we want to hear from you on this one, too. What were your favorite movies of 2013, and which ones do you think are Oscar-worthy, and why? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Rob Thomas, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So before we talk about the movies and really dig in there in terms of best movie, what does it take to be a contender for best picture these days?
Well, for me, I wrote a top 10 list. It'll be in 77 Square tomorrow. And as I looked at the list, I was thinking a lot of these movies are arguments for seeing movies in theaters. I mean, there's so much we can do on our phones, on our TVs, on our laptops. And movies really have to say, okay, you have to sit in a darkened theater and not talk to anybody for 2 hours, and we're going to make it worth your while. So that could be a movie like Gravity, where it's a completely immersive experience. That couldn't be a book. That couldn't be a TV show. It has to be experienced in the movie theater. Or it could be a movie that is more challenging that you really need to focus on, like 12 Years a Slave, which if, you know, maybe if it was on TV at home, you might find a way to turn it off and get yourself distracted because it's such intense subject matter.
Do you think that people in movies actually obey the turn off your cell phone thing? When I'm going, I don't see too many cell phones, whereas I think if I were at home, I think you'd be right, and I would be flipping through my email while I was watching.
I mean, people complain all the time about behavior in theaters, but I'm honestly impressed how good we are in theaters. Given how much we use our phones outside the theater, people are generally pretty well behaved. And I think that is testament to the fact that movies still have that power over us. There's still something about the lights going down, being surrounded by people, having a big, you know, trough of popcorn in your lap and really losing yourself for a couple hours. I think people still value that.
Especially in winter. Do you think in winter in Wisconsin, movies are doubly appealing?
I think so. Yes, I definitely think a good heated theater. Seems movies are longer now, which I don't mind at all. Like a 3-hour movie in the middle of a 10-degree afternoon. That sounds perfect. Yeah.
Well, let's dig into some of the movies that are going to be on your list tomorrow. And you told us about some of them now. What do you pick for Best Picture?
Well, I think my best picture was Gravity because this is the one with George Clooney and Sandra Bullock. They play sort of an near outer space thriller where they're astronauts who get stranded when their space shuttle gets destroyed. And it's just an amazing piece of work. It's cutting edge visual effects, but it's in service of story and emotion. And you really feel, especially if you watch it in the 3D version. And most times 3D is kind of just an extra $5 for no reason. But this was one that you just really need to experience in the theater. And, I thought this was a great year for movies, a great year for American movies, but that was one that was like, well, I don't think I've seen anything like that before.
That's interesting because I haven't seen that one yet. And it looks pretty bare bones. Every clip I saw, you know, there's just Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, or is it George Clooney, isn't it?
It is, right.
Floating in space.
Yes.
Every shot
right.
is that. And yet I heard from people that it feels like you're slowly suffocating while you watch it, which is part of why I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound that pleasant actually feel like that.
I think that works. I think you're right. It's very like there's no cutting back to mission control like, oh, I hope they're okay. You're stuck out there with them for 90 minutes. And it's a completely immersive and engrossing experience that you just can't really get anywhere else.
Well, there's another movie that reminds me of that one. I don't know if this is on your list for picks for Best Picture, but the Robert Redford movie where it's just him, hardly any dialogue, or I guess it would just be him talking to himself on a boat in
right.
the ocean.
All is lost. And that's also, it is also my top 10 list. And you're absolutely right. It's there's 10 lines of dialogue. One of them's a swear word, I think. And it's just him on this leaky boat trying to survive. And it's the exact same thing where you're with him every waterlogged step of the way, and it's again a movie where like maybe if you're watching it on DVD it won't have that same kind of power because it's like, well, he's just on a boat, but it really sucks you in when you see it in a theater. And he has, I mean, he's got that great Robert Redford face and just sucks you right in. Yeah.
How is that movie different than some of those other movies just like that that have been in the genre before? I'm thinking of the Tom Hanks one where he's, you know,
Oh, Castaway?
Castaway.
Right.
He finds the basketball named Wilson.
Right.
Not much happens. It's just him. What distinguishes this one?
For me, I think, like you said, with Gravity, it's just stripping it down to its essence. It's not messing around with a lot of other... I mean, in All Is Lost, you know the boat's name, but you don't know Robert Redford's name in the movie. I mean, they cut it down to the essence. And it seemed like there were a lot of movies, especially in the fall, that were kind of like, you are there in these intense situations. Another one, which didn't make my top 10 list, but is a great movie, which had Tom Hanks, was Captain Phillips, where he plays the freighter captain who's captured by Somali pirates. And that's another movie where you are completely engrossed and stuck with him in this really terrifying situation. And that's one I think will also be an Oscar contender.
Do you think that's part of what Hollywood is doing, or I guess independent filmmakers too, to lure people back to the theater and to seeing movies, is that they're making this almost this involuntary experiential thing where it's, you really feel like you've been suffocating in space or like you've been trapped on a boat because it's hyper realistic and there's no escape.
Well, it's like there's two different tracks in movies right now. One is like the summer blockbuster where you just have spectacle upon spectacle. Every week it seemed like the earth was blowing up this summer or being overrun by zombies or Superman was doing, you know, and then I feel like this is almost like a counter argument maybe in theater where it's like, okay, let's just cut it down to what's important, the emotion, the story, the images, and just keep the audience kind of contained in that. So it's kind of interesting, like this, these sort of two tracks that we're seeing right now in movies.
So we've got All Is Lost and Gravity movies sort of a particular style. What else is on your list?
Well, the number two movie I just saw on Sunday, and it opens in Madison and Milwaukee next week, is called Her. It's a new movie by Spike Jonze, who did Where the Wild Things Are and Being John Malkovich. So he's known for somewhat offbeat, sometimes very offbeat
quirky
movies. In this case, it's a love story between a man and his operating system on his computer. And it's like an everything movie. It's funny. It's kind of chilling. It's really smart and perceptive. It's really beautiful. And it's, I mean, above all, it's really very romantic. And walking in, I would never have thought like you could pull something like this off, but it's a really pretty amazing movie.
I'm glad that one is coming to Madison because I thought that I had missed it. I've
right.
been looking for it and it never came out and we're already past 2013.
Yeah.
But I guess it just broke late in Wisconsin.
Yeah, there's a bunch coming late where you probably heard a lot about them. Another top one on my list is Inside Llewyn Davis, which is the new Coen Brothers movie about a folk singer, kind of like a third-tier folk singer in New York in the early 60s. That's supposed to also come next week to Madison. Sorry, playing in Milwaukee. But that's a movie like, people are like, did I miss it? But it's like, being in Madison, being sometimes we get them a little bit later than the other cities, which is fine because like we get so many already. It's like we miss them all if they all came at once.
Well, we've been talking about a bunch of movies, among them Gravity and All Is Lost, Her, the Spike Jonze film, which will be opening in Wisconsin. So let's take a listen to Her. This is one that we all have the opportunity to see coming up soon.
Mr. Theodore Twombly, welcome to the world's first artificially intelligent operating system. We'd like to ask you a few questions.
Okay.
Are you social or antisocial?
I guess I haven't been social in a while.
How would you describe your relationship with your mother? Thank you. Please wait as your operating system is initiated.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Samantha.
Sounds to me like Scarlett Johansson, yeah. And I couldn't place the voice of the love interest.
Joaquin Phoenix, yeah,
okay.
He's really good at it, too.
All right, so those two are in there. And Scarlett Johansson, I'm guessing. This is just a voice role for her.
Exactly. You never see her in the movie.
How does she do?
Fantastic. Yeah, it's people are wondering if she could get the first voice-only Best Supporting Actress nomination. It's that good.
That would be interesting to see, huh?
Yeah.
And one that had been discussed widely, a lot of people were really affected by the movie 12 Years a Slave.
Absolutely.
What do you know about that one?
That's a great movie. I think it's number 4 on my list this year. And yeah, I know people who have walked out of it. It's the true story of a free African American man who was kidnapped and sold into slavery for 12 years in the South and made his way out. And it's an amazing movie. It's very realistic about what slavery was like, but also really beautiful and really well acted. And it's a really, really powerful and well done movie. And I mean, that's one, like I said, some people might not stick with it if they're watching it on Netflix in 2 years, but it's one you definitely owe yourself to go see in a theater and kind of experience.
All right. Well, let's listen to that one. 12 Years a Slave.
I was born a free man, lived with my family in New York.
Be good for your mother.
Until the day I was deceived.
To Solomon.
Kidnapped, sold into slavery.
Well, boy, how you feel now?
My name is Solomon Northup. I'm a free man.
And you have no right whatsoever to detain me.
You're no free man. You're nothing but a Georgia runaway.
And clip there from 12 Years a Slave as we talk with Rob Thomas about the best films of 2013, possible Oscar contenders among them. And we want to know what your vote is for best film of the year. What movie really blew you away, stayed with you, you couldn't shake it off, and you think it deserves an Oscar? You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. We'll pick up our conversation after the news. I'm Veronica Rickard, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard. It's peak movie season right now, and we're talking with film critic Rob Thomas of 77 Square about some of the top contenders for Best Picture at the next Academy Awards. Also, we'll be taking a look ahead at what we can be looking forward to in 2014. And we're taking your calls now at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page or send us email to talk@WPR.org. Now, we began our conversation talking about Rob's top 10 list, and the first one we discussed was Gravity. Let's take a listen to that one.
Explorer's been hit. Explorer, do you read? Explorer, over. Explorer. Astronaut is off structure.
What do I do?
Dr. Stone is off structure.
What do I do?
Dr. Stone, keep hat. One cheap hat. That arm's gonna carry you too far. Listen to my voice. You need to focus. I'm losing visual of you. In a few seconds, I won't be able to track you. You need to detach. I can't do anymore. Do it now.
A clip from Gravity. I don't know if I'd live through that one.
I don't. We're just talking. It's like 90 minutes of Sandra Bullock screaming half-heartedly, but yeah.
All right. Well, let's go to the phones now. Deborah joins us in Milwaukee. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Last week, we went to the cinema in Mequon and wanted to see American Hustle. And they have now screens where they show you what seating's available and you can pick your seats. And that's a little frustrating, but it shows you there weren't enough seats left, any good seats left for American Hustle. There was like 8 left. And so we went to see The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which I wanted to see, as opposed to what my two friends wanted to see. Anyway, so I really enjoyed it. And one of my prerequisites for going to a movie is not knowing anything about it. And then the element of surprise is like an added bonus. And I was really surprised afterwards that most everybody sat through the credits, which I have never seen in Milwaukee, but in New York City it's common. And then someone clapped when the movie was over, and so I clapped too, and I was so happy that somebody else enjoyed it enough to to applaud.
Yeah, it's always fun when people clap at the end of movies. It doesn't happen often. So Secret Life of Walter Mitty, have you seen that one yet?
I haven't. No, it's one I definitely want to see with Ben Stiller. And I hear it's a really – I read the short story like in high school about the daydreaming guy. And it's one I really want to see. It looks really visually stunning. I think he filmed it in like Greenland and all over the world. So, I totally agree. That's one thing I like about film festivals. People are more disposed to applaud at the end of movies there. I don't know why, but yeah.
Well, thanks for telling us about that one, Deborah. That one's been out recently, so that's something people can try to catch. And let's go next to Jesus in Whitewater. Hello there.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Very well. I just want to let you guys know, have you seen Out of the Furnace? Christian Bale and Woody Harrelson?
Out of the Furnace.
I missed that one, and it went in and out of theaters pretty quick, and I really liked the filmmaker's last film, which was Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges, but I missed that one. How was it?
Oh, it was wonderful. Woody Harrelson is acting as Harlan DeGroot was phenomenal. I mean, he's eerie character, and I think he should be up for an Oscar for that performance.
All right. Well, thank you so much for telling us about that one, Jesus. And can we talk a second about Woody Harrelson? Because I never know if I should completely dismiss him as an actor or think he's incredible. What do you think about Woody?
I think he's kind of great. Yeah, I think he could have turned into kind of this goofball, but every once in a while he turns in this great performance. I mean, I think he's great, honestly, in the
Hunger Games.
Yeah, exactly.
I was gonna say, I think he's pretty good in Hunger Games.
That's a perfect role for him. Because he can be very funny, but also very serious. I think he's the villain in Out of the Furnace, like a meth king or something like that. And I think he has a new show on HBO, too. And, yeah, he's just one of those actors that's like, well, he's going to be interesting. Whatever happens, whether he's a goofball or like a serial killer, he's going to be interesting.
So we shouldn't dismiss him. We should look forward to his stuff.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. All right, well, thank you for that call, Jesus. And on to Alice in Sheboygan. Hey, Alice.
Hello. I would like to bring up Philomena with Judi Dench. I saw it last night, and it's everything I love in a movie. I just had told the person who answered the phone that her jump from a strong woman in Skyfall to this real person who had been damaged from an incident in the 1950s in a convent in Ireland was beautiful. She's a method actress. She was just wonderful.
Yeah, Judi Dench, I love her too. Yeah. She's like Maggie Smith to me. I think those venerable old English actresses are wonderful.
Oh, yeah. And great to watch in anything. I think she's probably the front runner for best actress.
Really?
I think so. Maybe her and Cate Blanchett from Blue Jasmine are probably the two who are probably most likely to win that. And I haven't seen Philomena yet, but I hear it's really great.
Excellent. Well, thank you for bringing that one up. Now, you mentioned Inside Llewellyn, is it Davis?
Right, Llewyn Davis.
Inside Llewyn Davis, and this is about a folk singer, a week in the life of a folk singer in New York, is that right?
Right?
Coen Brothers film.
Yeah, it's their new one. It's set in like 1960, 1961. So this is like Greenwich Village when, you know, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, that sort of thing. And this guy is like several tiers below them, just trying to eke out an existence. It's a really interesting movie for them. It's sort of funny in kind of a quiet way. It has fantastic music, especially if you like folk music, and has a lot of Coen Brothers regulars like John Goodman make cameos and stuff. So that's one, like I said, I think it's in Milwaukee now and will be in Madison and wider next week.
And we've got a clip of it. Let's listen.
If I had wings, I'd know where it's done.
What'd you say you played?
Folk songs.
Folk songs. Solo act?
No, I had a partner.
Threw himself off the George Washington Bridge.
George Washington Bridge? You throw yourself off the Brooklyn Bridge, traditionally. George Washington Bridge. Who does that?
Well,
I had a man.
I love it already.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Yeah.
And are you a Coen Brothers fan in
general? I am. I think there's probably one or two that of all their movies I'd say I didn't like, but yeah.
It's one of their better ones,
maybe. I think so, yeah. It's really, I mean, you really feel like you're, I'm talking about immersive, but you really feel like you're back in 1960 in New York and that whole environment. And yeah, it's really good.
What do you think about how they use music in their films? Usually it's front and center.
Yeah. And this is one, I think Marcus Mumford from Mumford and Sons helped write the songs and kind of curate the soundtrack. And it's a mix of originals and sort of classic ones. And it's really, you know, extension of character. I think Oh Brother, We're Out There was the other one I sort of would compare it to, where like the music is like almost like another character in the movie.
Now, I understand that you are also a big fan of the new Disney film Frozen.
Yes.
Would you sing some for us?
Yeah, I can do Let It Go. Hold on. Yeah.
I could too. We'll do a duet.
Yeah, absolutely.
My family's obsessed with this movie right now.
I thought it was the best animated movie of the year. I mean, I took my daughters to it and we were just loving it from start to finish.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. It was like kind of a princess movie, kind of a Disney princess movie, but then it starts playing with
mm-hmm.
sort of the conventions of what you think,
yeah.
in a really interesting and satisfying way. And of course, the snowman is just fantastic.
Yeah, have you heard of that guy before, Josh Gad?
Yeah, he was in he was in the Book of Mormon on Broadway. That's sort of his big claim to fame. He's been in a few movies and a couple of TV shows, but this was one where like like his voice just perfectly matched yeah. that snowman. I mean, he was just so cheerful and mm-hmm. fun and
naive.
Stuff. Naive. Yeah.
Yeah. People said about Frozen that it was sort of Disney reclaiming their throne and their legacy. Do you see it that way?
I mean, somewhat. Yeah. I mean, because Pixar's kind of ruled the roost for a few years. And I would say between this and also Tangled from a couple years ago, which mm-hmm. is kind of the same thing where it kind of plays with a fairy tale, but in an interesting way. They're finding ways to go like, okay, this is what we do. But here's a way we can do it that's a little fresher and, you know, a little more empowering to women and girls and stuff like that. So, yeah, I thought it was great.
And the music is so good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So before I let you go, 2014 is here. So the Oscar contenders are behind us. But what's ahead of us? What do we have to look forward to?
Well, January is usually kind of slow for movies. There's like a movie with a hunky Frankenstein coming, which I wouldn't recommend. But after that, the one I'm looking forward to in February is called The Monuments Men.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like an art history Dirty Dozen with George Clooney and Matt Damon and Bill Murray and John Goodman playing like art historians in World War II trying to save priceless paintings and sculptures from the Nazis, which is a really interesting idea based on a true story. George Clooney directs. There's a new Wes Anderson movie coming in March called The Grand Budapest Hotel with Ralph Fiennes. It looks really good.
Now, was he Moonrise Kingdom?
Yes.
Was that,
that his?
Okay,
last
so
one.
He does sort of the quirky offbeat.
Yeah. And this one is just as quirky and offbeat. I mean, if people don't like that, they're not going to like it. But if you love that stuff, it's going to be just right up your alley.
And what is that one called?
The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Excellent.
Sometime in March.
And there's a Spider-Man coming up. Did I hear that?
That's right. The Amazing Spider-Man 2. So there are three Spider-Mans, and now we're on a reboot with these Amazing Spider-Mans, directed by Mark Webb, who's from Madison.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And it comes out, he was a West High grad, and now he's a big blockbuster director. And that comes out May 2nd, which is officially the start of the summer movie season. So
really? Okay.
Summer movies are only 4 months away. So that's maybe the best news of
it really
movies.
Is. Yeah. I got to say, as I look out at a cold, dark, snowy Wisconsin, thinking about May 2nd sounds pretty
start
good.
Start of summer. I'll take it. Yeah.
All right. Well, Rob, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
We've been talking to Rob Thomas, and he is the editor of 77 Square, the arts and entertainment publication of the Capital Times. And just ahead, it's another slice of Wisconsin life, and we ask you what you resolve to do in 2014. Curious, do you have a New Year's resolution, or is it something you've kind of let slip by the wayside? It used to be everybody had a New Year's resolution, and you shared them, and you tried to keep them. Usually it involved losing weight or something like that. Well, what about you? Do you have a New Year's resolution? Why or why not? Tell us what yours is, and if you've actually managed to keep one of these things, how did you do it? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, and we'll get to your phone calls in just a little bit. That's all coming up after this check of the latest headlines with Kristen Durst from WPR News. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret will be back on Monday. Coming up, we want to hear from you. Did you make a New Year's resolution this year, or did you give up the practice because you never keep them? And if you've actually made one of them stick, tell us how you did it. We'd love to know. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And if you didn't make a New Year's resolution, why do you think that seems like people aren't making them, or at least they're not sharing them as often? 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. But before we take your calls, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Animals have quite a few lessons to offer us. When Carrie Rothbard moved to Wisconsin, she took a few cues from her horse.
"He's gone wild," says Don, the guy who trimmed cougar's hooves back in New York. He laughs when I tell him I've just chased my horse along an icy path for half an hour in the bitter Wisconsin cold. He laughs harder when I describe Cougar and his new mare, how he'll head off another horse so she can have her turn at the hay, how she waits alone at the gate when I ride him. "He's got himself a herd of one," says Don. "He's reverting to his natural state." In captivity, as in the wild, horses are social beings, bound by the instinct that tells them they're safe only when another horse has their back. Watch a herd of horses, and you can almost see the efferent fibers that connect them, letting them know they can rest easy, or impelling them to flight. Yet there is more to it than that. Cougar and his mare touch muzzles and breathe reassuringly into each other's nostrils after even the shortest separation. They graze and play together. Sometimes they lean gently side to side, one draping a neck across the other's withers. All the while, they belong to a larger community, and Cougar's shoulders and flanks bear the bite marks of his bids for status. I find myself thinking about community as I come within sight of my horse for the second time today. Having recently moved to Wisconsin, I am often on the outside looking in. The fact that people live close together does not mean they have much to do with each other. Social relationships do not necessarily entail true connection. And yet we generally hold that as human beings we only grow fully into humanness in relationship. All real living is meeting, according to philosopher Martin Buber. Dialogue is the fundamental means of recognizing and exploring the sphere of the between. I am within catching distance of Cougar, but it's too late. The sun has dropped to the horizon. The midwinter air has turned the sort of cold that makes horses frisk. Buber believed that in the stillness of the in-between world lie possibilities beyond expression, transcending everyday life. Two geldings are head wrestling. I turn to look as a sudden impulse crackles through the herd. As if on cue, several horses take off to the far end of the field where they slam to a halt, spin, and then gallop back. When they charge a second time, Cougar and his mare join in, heads lowered, leaning into their speed. The drumbeat of many hooves against the frozen earth reverberates in my chest, pounding out a message I struggle to understand. Could it be there's a connection between this wildness and the embrace of something larger? Could it take wildness to enter the realm of the in-between? More horses are galloping back and forth now. Their breath shoots out in white clouds. Someone whinnies, and I realize I've been holding my breath. I exhale to make room for the wild in me.
Carrie Rothbard is a writer and animal lover in Madison. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. This episode was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. You can find more information on our website at wisconsinlife.org. And now we'd like to hear from you. It's obviously New Year's Day, the kind of back end of it, but it's a good time to think about resolutions. And we'd love to know, what are your New Year's resolutions? What are you hoping to achieve in the new year? And do you still keep that tradition of making a New Year's resolution? Or do you think it's kind of outdated and now we're kind of always moving toward a goal of some kind or another? Do you think New Year's resolutions still matter? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. If you've got some advice for making them stick, love to hear that too. And let's go to our caller. Susan is joining us in Rice Lake. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing okay. How about you?
I'm fine. I was just calling to say that I took a class online for free called Cracking the Habit Code, 21 Days to Keeping Your New Year's Resolutions, and there's information about it online. I found it really helpful. It was sort of about how to keep habits, how to take tiny steps to make changes in your life.
And did you find it helpful?
Yeah, I did find it helpful. I took it last year, but I noticed that this lady's offering the class again, and it's free. And you can find that information at greatergood.berkeley.edu.
Do you want to share with us what habit it helped you either keep or break?
Well, it was basically making tiny steps towards the change instead of giant steps. So by making little changes instead of trying to make sweeping changes, you're more likely to be successful.
Right, little bite-sized chunks of your goal instead of going for the whole enchilada.
Right, and that way it's not so overwhelming and you feel like you can actually do it. And then also the thing she talked about was kind of rewarding yourself a little bit for small successes so that you don't feel like you're just sacrificing, but you give yourself a pat on the back towards your goal.
That sounds good. Well, Susan, thank you so much for calling and for giving us some ideas about how to keep those New Year's resolutions. You can join Susan. We're taking your calls right now at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Do you think that New Year's resolutions still matter? Have you had any luck with keeping them? And did you make one for 2014? Well, joining us now in the studio is producer Chris Molina talking about some resolutions that he might be thinking of. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, hey, Veronica. Thanks for having me on here. You know, you had asked me about New Year's resolutions, and I think I stopped making them, you know, years ago because, you know, I do the thing where you make it on January 1st and it sounds great. I'm going to go to the gym or do whatever. And of course, you know, 2 weeks later, it's in the very back of your mind. So I stopped making them a while back, but I knew I was going to, you know, come on here and talk with you a little bit. So I did some searching on the internet and I found something sort of interesting online. I found a piece about New Year's resolutions that we'd like to see for Hollywood in 2014. And, you know, we were just talking about movies. So it kind of got me thinking of, you know, what we want to see from studios in 2014, what we want to see change in the movie industry. You know, what worked in 2013 that we'd like to see more of, mm-hmm. what didn't work that we, you know, sort of want to see go away. And it sort of got me thinking about a couple of things. You know, there was some stuff on this list like keep better track of finances, learn that a good movie always beats brand recognition. You know, I think in 2013 we saw a lot of reboots of franchises that I don't think anyone really asked for. I mean, I didn't see the Lone Ranger movie. I can't speak for you, but I can't imagine there was a ton of demand for that. And I think the movie sort of flopped as a result. One thing that's not on this list that I was thinking about recently was I would sort of like to see the way movies are promoted change a little bit. One movie that I was super excited to see when I found out it was coming out was Anchorman 2. And I still want to see the movie. But in the months leading up to its release, we saw just this barrage of commercials. And it was Ron Burgundy everywhere. And he was selling us Ford trucks or some sort of truck. I think it was Dodge trucks now. I should know it. I saw all the commercials. I mean, there was an ice cream that he was promoting. He co-anchored a local newscast. It was like Ron Burgundy overload. And here was a movie, I think you already knew whether or not you wanted to go and see it. I'm not sure it benefited from all this extra promotion. And I think a lot of people are tired of the character as a result. And I haven't seen the movie yet. And I think part of it is I got so burnt out on Ron Burgundy. I wasn't sure. I do want to see the movie. I might need a little break before I go and see it.
You had buzz overload. Well, it seems like, you know, that's a good idea. Maybe making New Year's resolutions instead of just for people, but for, you know, entities like Hollywood, or I can imagine having a New Year's resolution for Congress saying, I will accomplish things.
Sure. Well, I won't come.
I will play nice with others and we will achieve things this year.
Well, I have nothing to say about Congress, but in terms of movies, I think, you know, the prevailing attitude with Hollywood for so long was, hey, we know what you want, filmgoers, and we're going to make it for you. And I think that's starting to change now because, you know, we have a lot more entertainment options. And I don't think what used to work in Hollywood still works. You know, I was thinking with a lot of the big movies this year, some of them, you know, did have star power. You know, we saw Robert Redford and we saw Sandra Bullock and
George Clooney.
Exactly. But on the other hand, you had a lot of really successful movies with, you know, characters playing leads who you've never heard of before. And these movies were wildly successful. You know, movies that maybe 10 years ago wouldn't have had a chance.
Thing I liked about the Disney movie Frozen, actually, was that it did not have, it wasn't just top-loaded with stars. There were mm-hmm. a couple of stars in it, but some were from Broadway and lots of people that you had never heard of. And I think that was part of why it was successful.
Yeah, and I'm not sure movie producers really know what we want anymore. I'm not sure, you know, filmgoers always know what we want either. But, you know, I think we as filmgoers, we're willing to try new things. We want to see new and cool movies. Maybe this is why Gravity did so well, and there is one with stars in it. But, you know, I think we do want new things. We don't necessarily always want that Avengers sequel, although it might be cool.
All right, so some resolutions for Hollywood. And we are curious about you. What if you'd like to share something that you think a New Year's resolution for Hollywood or for yourself, you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Coming up, we'll learn how artificial light and light pollution isn't only blocking true darkness, but also it might have a negative impact on our health. I'm Veronica Rickert. The news is next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.